Blog Talk Radio.
That's right, everybody. You know who it is. Coach Mike Jones on the coach with the most. Coming at you hard from coast to coast. I don't want to boast, but now I got to roast you in my social media posts. You double dose, a diagnose. You feeling tired, life inspired, now you're a ghost. I'll be your host, so won't you raise a toast to the coach with the most, Coach Mike Jones.
Another edition of the Coach Mike Jones Show podcast, episode 68. I'm here with my co-host for today, the one and only Sign Guy. How you doing, brother?
Doing all right today, Coach, on Veterans Day.
Yes, happy Veterans Day weekend. Why don't you introduce our guest and give him the first-timer question, please?
Well, today our guest is noted wrestling journalist Mike Rogers. Welcome to the Coach Mike Jones podcast, and as you are probably familiar from being on Turnbuckle Turmoil, the first-timer question we like to ask in these neck of the woods, how did you get into the business of professional wrestling?
Well, thank you for having me. First of all, I was just a fan for years and years and years, and I decided I wanted to start doing a wrestling bulletin, and in 1983, I started the bulletin Ring Around the Northwest. It was just a very small, regional, three-page bulletin done on a typewriter because it was before computers. And I just kept doing that, was still very interested in continuing doing that, and it expanded to 10 pages. And at that point, I tried to start having an interview in each issue. And as the years went by, I was fortunate enough to be able to interview some of the top wrestlers around, some legends like Don Leo Jonathan and Bull Ramos and Pampero Firpo, John Tolos, just on and on. I was really fortunate to be able to interview some legends and also current wrestlers. And the bulletin lasted 30 years, and it just got to the point where the bulletin was costing actually more to reprint than it was the price that I was asking. It got to the point where it was costing $1.10 to reproduce, and I was asking $1 for it, and that wasn't even including postage. And I said, I figure it's probably about time to wrap it up on the bulletin.
Yeah, and that was a sad day for me. I really enjoyed that, but you know, a lot of things, most things come to an end. It was a really great run, and man, I really enjoyed it, and I thank you for putting my interview in there.
Oh, absolutely. It was always a lot of fun to do. When I was growing up, I thought the job that I wanted to have was a journalist, but as I went along, I knew that the only thing I really wanted to write about was wrestling, so I figured there wasn't too many, you know, there's a few of those jobs, but not very many. So I'm having a lot of fun, had a lot of fun doing the bulletin and having a lot of fun doing these books.
Yeah, man, and, you know, I really enjoyed sharing a lot of locker rooms with you and up all the way from Canada to Portland. And, you know, I considered you one of the best referees in the Northwest. I really enjoyed all the history of the Northwest wrestling that you've came up with so far. And you have, how many books you got now, five?
Yes, I just came out with my fifth one. And I appreciate that also, Mike, about refereeing. That was certainly one of the high points of my wrestling career, being able to referee for a while. And I was fortunate enough to be in the ring with some legends like Bad News Allen, Ricky Morton, George Steele, Tito Santana, Buddy Rose. So I had a wonderful time doing that. And I don't know about the part where you think I was a good referee, because I felt green in there all the way to the end.
Okay. And then, man, I'm also proud of some other things. I used to have my own wrestling place, the South End Boys and Girls Club, since I was a coach there. I played there as a kid. My son played there. We started wrestling there all the time, and you would come to our shows. And I'm proud to say that you got your first wrestling match at one of the South End Boys and Girls Club shows, a battle royal that I have on tape somewhere in my locker, in my library.
I have that on somewhere as well. And that it wasn't my first. It was my only match.
Okay,
I was riding up with Ed Moretti, and I told him, you know, I think Debashi would let me be in the battle royal. And Ed kind of looks at me funny, and he goes, "You think so?" I go, "Well, I know they're going to have to pin me because I can't really go. Don't think I can go over the top rope." And he has a little laugh, and when he tells the story about the battle royal, it's hilarious. Ed's a great storyteller, and he really spices up that story.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, and then other things I'm proud of is, my goodness, you know, I made top three matches back in the early 2000s, so that's a big accomplishment for me. Me and Awesome Adam versus the Suicide Kings. And then
Absolutely.
Also, you compared me to athletics Dr. Death Steve Williams. That made me feel good, too. Thank you.
Absolutely. I know I can remember this, reffing one of your matches, and you set a – I don't know if I'll have the move exactly right, but you set a chair in the ring, and you bounced off the ropes, hit the chair, hit the top rope, and did a flip out of the ring. And when it was over, I told you I had no idea that you were able to pull off that move.
Yeah, man, Sabu and Rob Van Dam were huge fans of those guys, still are. But, of course,
sure,
you can't wrestle like that every day.
Right.
Okay, now, back to the interview. Who were some of your heroes growing up?
Oh, I loved watching Lonnie Mane. I loved watching The Skull, who turned out to be Bugsy McGraw. Real character-driven wrestlers, you know, and we're talking about the time period. I'm 12, 13 years old. Later on, I loved watching Dynamite Kid, of course, when he was here, and Kurt Hennig when he was here. I really enjoyed the babyface preliminary guys. And Frank, my partner who works with me on the books, he always teases me. It's guys like Eric Froelich and Bobby Nichols and Len Shelley. You know, they rarely won matches, but I think they had a lot of talent, a lot of ability, and I enjoyed watching those guys wrestle.
Oh, yes, me too. What about in sports and music? Did you have any heroes in those genres?
Music. I like easygoing music. Fleetwood Mac. I really like a group called Nathaniel Ratliff and the Night Sweats. And in fact, I ventured off to Red Rocks in California in August and had a chance to see them perform there. So that was a kind of a bucket list type of thing.
Awesome.
The sport, yeah, it was a lot of fun. Sports heroes, I enjoyed watching basketball and football. I don't really have anybody that sticks out as memorable for me.
Okay. Any heroes in ordinary life to give a shout-out to?
That's a tough one. I can't really think of anybody off the top of my head.
Okay. Next segment is called Memorable Matches. In your lifetime, what are some of the most memorable matches you've seen, whether it's VHS tape, internet, or live?
I saw a match probably around 1975, and it was the Royal Kangaroos versus Jesse Ventura and Bull Ramos. And so it's 1975, and it's on TV. And later in life, I compared that match to something that you would have seen in the ECW arena. I think three of the wrestlers ended up juicing. It was one of the wildest matches I'd ever seen, and it was a Saturday night show, and they led up for a rematch on Tuesday night. They just tore down the house, and then they came right back, you know, three nights later for a Tuesday night special. So I really, that match sticks with me. Currently, I love watching Zack Sabre Jr. wrestle, Bryan Danielson wrestle. I didn't see that match where they wrestled each other, but I feel like that would have been a great match. I like the rough stuff at times, but I really like to see the technical stuff as well.
Nice, okay. And then you've been involved with a lot of matches. What are some of the most memorable matches you've been involved with?
One match up in Cloverdale, and I remember it was just like anything in that could have gone wrong in this match went wrong. There was a wrestler by the name of JT Styles. He was outside the ring, and I think somebody came off the apron onto him onto a cross body block, and he lost his feet went out from underneath him, and his head hit the floor.
Oh, goodness.
It was just one of those sickening thuds. And there was lots of more interference, and a lot of other wrestlers came out. And then Pat Brady came out to interfere. It's the same match. And Pat Brady goes running from the dressing room to the ring, and he goes to step up onto the ring. And the ring, Tim's ring was low, but he went to step up, and he just totally blew out his knee.
And
he rolled into the ring, and he kind of grabbed me. He goes, "I think I just broke my leg." And so he hadn't touched anybody. He just ran from the dressing room, rolled into the ring, and said, "I think I broke my leg. Don't let anybody touch me." And so it was like just everything that could go wrong in one match. You know, I ran back to the dressing room to get some help. And in Cloverdale, it's that small dressing room where 20 large men are shoulder to shoulder trying to get dressed. And at that moment, I don't know, there was not one single person in the dressing room. And
oh,
so I ran back out to the ring to make sure no one would pat, and finally it came to an end. That was one of the most memorable matches that I have.
Dang, okay. All right, and then let me see here. Who were some of the toughest wrestlers you've seen out there?
Bad News Allen, I think, was tough. I imagine he was tough, but he gave the aura that he absolutely was tough. And in the dressing room, he was the nicest guy, but it made me nervous just being around him because I did not want to mess up.
Excuse me.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, and his legendary standing up to Andre the Giant.
Right, exactly. You know he was a tough man. You just I just never wanted to do anything wrong to get on his, have him upset with me. And
yes,
Tim Flowers,
sure.
I was going to say, I love Tim, but Tim made me nervous as well because Tim, especially on his own shows, would be wound a little bit tight, and you just never wanted Tim to get upset with you either.
Yeah, for sure. Okay, now it's time for me to hand you back over to the guy who's so fly. He's going to take you sky high, and that sign guy. How you doing?
All right, thank you, Coach. Well, Mike, this past week on AEW Dynamite, they got into a pretty lively discussion on Jim Valley, who, of course, is from our very own Pacific Northwest. They were referencing some of his information that was posted on X. It's not often that on national TV they talk about someone that is pretty much a regional-based wrestling personality like that. What did you think of Jim Valley getting so much notice from the announcers on AEW this week?
Well, I thought that was wonderful, and I have a little bit of selfish, because the information that Jim Valley passed along came from my book, and it was information about Sting. Sting had wrestled in Oregon one other time. It was in 1989, and that's the information that ended up even the announcers mentioned. And also, Frank and Jim Valley were there at the matches, and they passed along my book to Tony Schiavone and got a picture of Tony Schiavone holding the book with the idea that he might take it back to Tony Khan. And because I understand Tony Khan's a big wrestling history buff, and that would just be kind of exciting to know that, you know, that book's being passed around in the back a little bit, and I kind of like that idea.
Have you ever spoken to or had any contact with Tony Khan prior to sending the book out his way?
No, I haven't.
I mentioned Jim Valley, of course, but between yourself, Jim Valley, Brian Alvarez, Vicious Vinny V, we have a lot of wrestling journalists here in the Pacific Northwest. A lot of you are nationally known, in fact, and not just purely known in this area. What do you think it is that sparked so much wrestling journalism coming out of the Pacific Northwest, which historically wasn't necessarily a huge, well-known bastion of wrestling nationwide?
I really think, and it's exactly right, the territory of the Northwest, Portland and Vancouver, weren't that widely known or recognized around the country, but there's such a huge tradition, you know, the tradition where Portland wrestling was on at the same time period for years and years, the same man, the Owens family, promoted wrestling for years and years and years. So it's that tradition that all of us, I think, kind of enjoyed and facilitated off of. All of us, Jim Valley, you know, he's been a broadcaster and so he goes at wrestling a lot in that vein. Brian Alvarez is definitely a true journalist, and he's made his mark that way. That I mentioned earlier, I would have loved to have made my living as a wrestling journalist. So hats off to Brian Alvarez for that.
How was your initial dream or goal to sort of be in that Bill Apter role where you are sort of the face of wrestling journalism as a whole for the entire nation, or were you looking at a different form of that?
you know, when I was in high school, I just thought that it would be neat to make my living. And I really had no idea of how to make that happen. And I think back there in the 70s, I don't know if there was, you know, with the exception of maybe magazine publishers, I don't know if there was any wrestling journalists that were making their living off of it. So I didn't see a pathway of making that possible.
And when you think of wrestling historians, there's also a lot of those out here. And you have guys like a Ken Hamlin, you have guys like a Tom Burke, guys like George Shire that are nationally known to be the utmost when it comes to wrestling history and maintaining a lot of that. Here in the Northwest, we have Ken Hamlin, we have Matt Farmer, Kevin Sullivan I would put in there, guys that are true wrestling historians and really savor the history of the sport going back to the formation of it. In a similar question to the journalist one, what do you think it is that has attracted so many well-known wrestling historians out of this area?
Again, I think it's tradition. I have a interesting Tom Burke story. When I was probably about 13, 14 years old, I wrote to Ring Wrestling for the Pen Pal section, and that was Tom Burke's column. And, you know, I just wrote that I'd like to trade pictures and clippings and programs and anything. And so that was printed somewhere in Ring Wrestling in around 1973, 74. And Tom Burke and I were pen pals for years and years and years. And when I was fortunate enough to be honored at Cauliflower Alley, Tom Burke was sitting at my table, and as well, Ken Hamlin was sitting at my table, good friends. So I appreciated that those friendships lasted many, many years. Also, I wanted to mention one other person who was probably one of the most honored wrestling journalists you didn't mention, but it was J. Michael Kenyon. And almost all of the wrestling journalists that are still around will point to him as the leader of the pack. And he lived in the Seattle area, was a newspaper person, journalism person, and his knowledge of wrestling, especially way back in the day, the beginning of the sport, you know, is unparalleled to anybody, and his research and his writings is something that we all look up to today.
Now, the most recent book we discussed on Turnbuckle Terminal when you were with us there, but you mentioned how it was the best-selling wrestling book the day it came out, and it beat out Becky Lynch's autobiography, which has the WWE machine behind it and has been mentioned on national television. What's it like for you to come out with a book that obviously was a labor of love for you and have it outselling books with that much money behind them and that much notoriety?
Yeah, I'm really proud of that. I was really surprised with that as well. This book is in a little bit different category of the other books. This is in wrestling biographies, and all my other books have just been in just wrestling books, however they kind of label those together. And so on the day that it came out, yeah, I was really surprised. It was number one, and it lasted about a week, you know, and right in there, and number one, number two. And I realized that without that extended big corporate money or big, big names that it's not going to last there for, you know, an extended period of time. Yesterday, you know, I always kind of glance, just curious at all the books. Yesterday, I believe, was the first time, and I'm not sure what happened, but the first time that all five of my books were in the top 100 in their division. And it's probably the case where one person happened to buy all the books or something like that. You can always tell when a purchase is made that you jump from maybe 800 to 250, you know, and it's fun to watch. But yeah, I was, you know, really proud that it debuted there at 1 and 2, and I got a kick out of it for sure.
We're in the gift-giving season right now, and obviously wrestling fans enjoy giving and receiving wrestling-related content. With the book out now, are you going to take a page from Scott Romer out of Indianapolis and make the loop of independent wrestling shows and try to sell books live at the matches, or are you looking strictly at online and bookstore sales?
There's one promotion in the Northwest that offered an invitation for me to come out, and I haven't taken them up on that yet, but that's certainly a good idea. Amazon, the books are all available on Amazon, and here in the last 6 months, for a book to be into a bookstore, it's a different process. They don't order their books from Amazon. It's a company called Ingram. And when you get your books included in their inventory, that's when bookstores can order your books. And we've made that happen in the last 6 months. And so Powell's Bookstore in Portland has my books available. That may be the only bookstore that I know of that has it available. But there were some orders from Europe for the different books, and it's always, you can kind of track them because there's not lots and lots of orders coming in, but you can track the individual orders and see where the orders are coming from. So, yeah, somewhere in Europe there was a few copies of Portland Wrestling being ordered, which is kind of interesting.
Well, I will personally invite you to any show I happen to be doing, and I will make sure that there's a spot for you at merchandise tables if you are so inclined. So I will pass that information along after we're done here.
Very good. Thank you.
I'm looking at where things stand with you right now. You've come out with 5 books. Do you have another book idea in you at this point as far as a project for the next installment?
You know, I've looked at what more can be written about Portland wrestling, and there's probably a book prior to 1960 because we just gleamed on that, just glanced over that. There's another wrestling historian who has expressed interest in doing that book. And so I might just give somebody else a chance. But I do have an idea. And besides the Northwest, Hawaii was probably my very favorite territory to watch and keep track of. And the reason is I was always very interested. I just thought they had the most compelling wrestlers through the 60s. I was always a big fan of King Curtis and Ripper Collins and Lonnie Main and a lot of the guys who worked there. But then also they would have the wrestlers going to Australia or Japan on their way over or on their way back. They would always stop by and wrestle. And so the cards that happened in Hawaii, to me, were just unbelievable. And I I chased Ed Francis for an interview for probably 15 years. I had talked to him a couple times, and I met him at a cauliflower alley and indicated that I really, really wanted to have an interview, and finally we made that happen. And Ed Francis came out with his own book on Hawaii wrestling, and my interview with him was just prior to that. So I kind of felt like he wasn't giving me the as much as he could, because his own book was coming out. So it was wonderful to talk to him, and one of the most sought after interviews I'd ever had. But I always felt like, gosh darn it, it could have been just a little bit better. And I also interviewed Lord Blears, who was Ed Francis's right hand man in all the promoting that went on in Hawaii. And I kept Lord Blears did a better job of talking and explaining and trying to give me some insight on Hawaii wrestling. And I kept asking questions in different ways as far as how Hawaii wrestling was so special, because those cards were just so loaded. And he kept reiterating to me that it was the locals that drew the house. Guys like King Curtis and Ripper Collins and Sammy Steamboat and the guys who were always there. And the guys that just happened to fly in or be on the cards to fill out the cards, even though they might be big, big names, yeah. Patterson and Stevens and John Tolos and big, big names, they just happened to be on the card. He just reiterated that those weren't the guys that drew the money. It was the locals that drew the money and drew the house.
Very nice. Hopefully that Hawaii book becomes a reality, and I will throw out there, no one has really written on Dean Silverstone's territory as a book yet. But
except Dean.
Except for Dean, but as far as an outside person looking at it, we haven't gotten
and
that yet.
That's true. That is true.
Well, at this point, I will pass you right back over to the namesake of this very podcast, the coach with the most coming at us from coast to coast, Coach Mike Jones.
All right, Mike, in your time as a referee, who were some of your favorite people to work with?
Always Ed Moretti, Moondog Moretti. He asked me to be a referee for some shows that he was promoting, and it was always fun to work with him. I think a lot of times Ed would kind of make his mission to see if he could crack me up. And it was always fun being in the ring with Ed. Some other guys that I happened to be in the ring with that I was just very, very happy to be. I was in the ring with Sergeant Slaughter, Tito Santana, Bob Orton Jr., Ricky Morton, and then, you know, Richie Magnet, Ole Olsen, Buddy Wayne, guys like those who have sadly passed on way too soon. Those are the ones that come to mind. Buddy Rose, those are the ones that come to mind immediately.
Nice. Now, in your times doing interviews, what are some of your favorite interviews you did?
I always loved Ed's. You know, we always go back to Ed because we're such good friends. And I think for somebody to do a really, really good interview, they have to trust you. You know, there's always that balance, especially with the legends, of being honest and being able to tell you information that's going to be interesting, that's not going to be insulting as far as, you know, the kayfabe that's involved. It's always good if you have something that you can tie together before you start your interview. And I remember I was speaking with Bull Ramos, and there was one thing that tied it together that relaxed him a little bit. My wife knew Bull Ramos's daughter when they were little girls, and they were friends and they played together. And so I was able to tell him, I said, my wife played with your daughter when they were little. And that, you know, that's an endearing thing that relaxed him. And in my interview with Bull Ramos, I had set aside 2 hours, and I had an appointment after that. I had to go to the veterinarian. And when it got to the point, he's like, ask me some more. He's really having a good time. And I said, I'm so sorry, I have to go. You know, and I had hoped to call him again, and then I never did, and he passed away not long after that. But that was one that I'll always remember. John Tolos, I had met John Tolos at a cauliflower alley, and he was walking around with Gene Kaninsky, and he was teasing Kaninsky, and he's laughing. Tolos is laughing, and Kaninsky isn't selling any of the teasing. And there's about two or three of us. We're just following him around and listening to Tolos rib Kaninsky. And right at that point, we're outside. There's an earthquake that happens down in Los Angeles, and we're all standing around, and it's shaking and everything. So later on, when I went to do the interview, I said, I'm the person that was standing next to you at the Cauliflower Alley earthquake. And he goes, oh, I remember you. And then we were able to have a really nice interview. And Tolos was always known to be one that was a little bit protective of the business. And if I had to choose one question that I ever asked anybody, it would have been with John Tolos. And it was right at the end. And I asked him one last question. I said, John, how do you spell wrestling? And he kind of laughs. He goes, oh, he goes, you do it. I go, oh, no, you have to do it. and then he shouts it out, T-O-L-O-S, my boy, that's how you spell wrestling. So I remember that one very well.
Very nice. Okay. Yes, and some things I'm proud of is I was able to get you in the NGW green room for a promo interview down at Cauliflower Alley, so I thank you for that.
Oh, absolutely. Thank you.
And then also, speaking of Moondog, I was in like my sixth match ever at the South End Boys and Girls Club. I think it was probably our first or second time at the Boys and Girls Club. Man, it was what a match. Me versus Moondog, you were the referee. I had a whole side of the arena was my fans, and there was lots of heat during that match. And I'm not sure if you remember, but Moondog threw me out of the ring into my fan section. Do you remember that?
I do remember that, yes.
And my son was center chair there. He pushed my son out of the way, grabbed his chair, and hit me with it, and my son broke down in tears.
Oh, no. No.
And then to get an 18-minute count-out victory over him, man, he's definitely one of the toughest wrestlers of all time.
Definitely, yeah. Ed's a great guy.
Okay, did you play sports in high school or growing up?
I played a little bit of baseball, a little bit of basketball. At 5'6", I did not play basketball in high school, but I did make my college JV basketball team. And I scored 4 points during the season. So, yeah.
Yeah, that's
I'm a college basketball player.
Big time, yes, nice. All right. Okay, this next segment is called Favorites. I'm sure the fans would like to know what your favorite coffee to drink is.
Oh, for years and years and years, I did not drink coffee at all. And my wife was a coffee drinker, and we would always stop at Starbucks before we would go grocery shopping. And one day she said, try this. It's a peppermint mocha. She goes, it tastes just like hot chocolate. And I said, okay. And I absolutely cannot get enough of peppermint mochas. I have one every day.
Nice. Okay. Favorite concerts you've seen?
Favorite concert? Have to go back to the Nathaniel Ratliff concert at Red Rocks, Colorado. That happened this summer. Also, a close second would be Ray LaMontagne. And we have a really nice concert venue really close to my house, Edgefield. It's just kind of a restaurant. It's one of the McMinimum's properties that we're probably all familiar with in the Northwest. And Ray Long, I've seen some wonderful concerts. I saw Adele there before before it would have been a too small of a venue. It probably holds about 4,000 or 5,000 people. Ray LaMontagne, I saw. I've seen some nice concerts there.
Right on. Okay. And what are your favorite sports teams?
I play fantasy football very diligently. So I have some favorite players. I don't really have favorite teams. At the moment, I have a lot of Baltimore Ravens, so if I had to choose a team, that might be my favorite team. But if I didn't have players on that team, it would be some other team.
Okay. Who are some of the rising stars in wrestling coming up right now?
I really enjoy watching, like I mentioned earlier, Zack Sabre Jr. Will Ospreay is another one. And we can't forget Nick Wayne. You know, it's so exciting to see, you know, how far he's going to go, how fast he's going to do it. I had an interview. I had several interviews with Buddy Wayne. And in my second book, the interview series, we put those two or three interviews together from Buddy Wayne. And then I got a short little interview from Nick Wayne. And to kind of bookend that, and you know, it's going to be really exciting, like I mentioned, to see how far and how fast he's going, how far. You know, my thing that I was most interested in is, what's it like to be traveling? You know, this weekend I'm going to Japan, and this weekend I'm going to Atlantic City, and this weekend I'm going here and there, and then come back and just do ordinary high school, you know, and what the people around him are saying and thinking, you know, and you know, now he's out of high school, but it would still be interesting to, you know, I feel, and he kind of alluded to it, he was teased just a little bit. But now, you know, his dream's coming true, and you just wonder if it's the same sentiment, like, oh, I didn't realize Nick Wayne was going to be on TV every week, you know, when I had him in fourth period geometry last year.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's definitely awesome to see, that for sure. What are your suggestions for people wanting to get into the business?
Just probably find a really good school. Take it seriously, have a fallback plan. I think that's probably important, you know, because it's a hard business to achieve success. It's probably easier to get into the business, but it's harder to achieve success and, you know, be able to make your living off of it. So have a fallback plan.
Definitely. Do you have some schools you'd like to promote?
I believe the Buddy Wayne School, even though Buddy has passed on, I believe that's still probably the number one in Oregon, or in the Northwest, I mean, for sure.
Okay, and then what do you got coming up, Mike?
We're starting to look at that Hawaii book. I've started some initial work on it. It's a book that I honestly will need a little help with. I got the idea. Rock Rims, who is another historian and another wrestling author, he had decided that he wasn't going to do any more wrestling books, and he put a list of books that he had kind of worked on or had thoughts of. And so I spoke with him a little bit, and going back to the early parts of wrestling in Hawaii in the 30s and even before that, I reached out to the historian Mark Hewitt, and the amount of information that he had was unbelievable. And so, yeah, on this one, it's going to take a village. Dan Westbrook, who's a noted photographer and had a very, very good friend by the name of George Bipu, and I don't know if I'm saying his name exactly right. He was a legendary fan in Hawaii. He was like Hawaii's version of me when I was, you know, doing the bulletin and everything. And he's passed along on, but he had lots of photography and lots of writing, and you know, hopefully we'll be able to tap into his work as well. So this is gonna, this book, if this comes on, it's gonna, I need some help, and you know, there's people out there that you know, will step up and help out for sure. This, the Hawaii territory, the one thing that I'll be lacking it, with Portland, I have my memories of watching on TV. I don't have firsthand memories because I did not see Hawaii. So it'll, those type of things where I remember this angle that happened on Hawaii TV and this is what happened, that's what I'm lacking, and that's what I'll need a little bit of help with as far as people who were there and saw it.
Right on. I'm looking forward to that for sure. And then how do people get a hold of you?
If you want to get a hold of me, my email is ratnw@yahoo.com. And those are the initials from Ring Around the Northwest. That was my bulletin. If you're interested in the books, they're all available on Amazon. The first three books are all an interview series, and they're called Excitement in the Air, The Voices of Northwest Wrestling. And there's three different volumes, three different books of interviews. We tried to space them out so all the very, very best ones aren't in Volume 1. Volume 3 is still compelling. Also in Volume 3, we needed to reach out and get some current interviews, not just interviews that were from the bulletin. So there was some current interviews with the Grappler, Mike Miller, Carl Stiles, Bobby Kincaid, Bobby Bass, and a few others, Joey Jackson. So there was some, you know, interviews that were more current based. The next book that I had was called Katie Barred the Door, and it's a history of Portland wrestling. It is a kind of a timeline of, we touched on early, but then on 1960 we went through kind of like a timeline of who was here, who came, who left, the different angles, who were the champs, and then mixed in any little tidbit of information from an interview or from, you know, a memory that I had from seeing on TV. And so I really like that book as well. It's the timeline, the history of Portland wrestling. And it touches extensively from 1960 to the end of Don Owen promotion in 1992. And then this last book, yeah, this most recent book, is called Encyclopedia of Portland Wrestlers from the House of Action. And it's biographical sketches of every wrestler that wrestled at the Portland Sports Arena. And we went through and we talk about any memories, any facts, when they came, when they left, you know, any little tidbit of information. And I would do two or three sketches a day, you know, for 6 months or so, and getting down towards the end, and Frank, I always just do the writing and send it to Frank, and he does the layout and the everything, and he said, you've got about 50 more to go. We had a great big long list, and he goes, and we're about 400 pages, and I said, oh my gosh, is it going to be too big? And he says, no, yeah, it can never be too big. And so it finished out at, I think, 507 pages, and makes a great doorstop. You know, it's a big one. It's a big one. I think people will like it. There's a lot of information in there.
Yes, and I definitely want to give a shout-out to Frank Culbertson for all he's done for the Northwest wrestling scene. And he's your partner in all these books, right?
Absolutely. We sat down and had lunch, you know, a couple years ago, and he said, you know, all those interviews that you have, they'd make a good book. And I kind of laughed and shook my head, And he looks at me, he goes, "No, really, they'd make a good book, and I can help you." And that's how it started.
Nice. And you guys you self-published all those through Amazon, right?
Yes, yes. The first few books we had help with John Cosper, who's a wrestling publisher. He has his own books. And we went through him, and he helped facilitate everything, and it was very much a big help.
Nice. Okay, cool. Yes, and then the other thing I want to say, man, Mike, every time I've seen you, you always put a smile to my face. Man, I've always enjoyed your interviews and everything you're about. I mean, it never seemed like you got involved with the Northwest politics of wrestling, which, man, that stuff has gotten out of hand in the past. I really appreciated that also. Thank you for everything you've done.
Oh, you bet. One quick story on that. At times I would write about matches that maybe were not very good. And one time I was at a match in Portland. Two wrestlers were wrestling, and it was not a good match. Lots of mix-ups. And one wrestler, at the conclusion of the match, and he gave me far too much credit, but the match was over, he rolled out of the ring, walked over to me and said, "Please, please don't write about this match." I got a laugh out of it. And I just thought, "Oh, you are giving me way too much credit." And from that point on, I did write a little bit about that match, and the other wrestler happened to call me. He wasn't happy with me. And I thought at that point, I go, what is the point of writing negatively? I'll focus on writing about the good things. Because why go to a match when you're going to have half the locker room upset at you over something negative that you've written? If you don't say anything, if it's bad and you just don't say anything, that maybe is just the way to leave it. And that way, like you said, you kind of stay out of the politics and the boys. And, for a while I had a tagline on the bulletin, the sheet the boys read. So that was kind of fun because they truly liked reading it. And that way, they weren't upset with you and you didn't have a lot of heat going on, and that seemed to work out a lot better.
For sure. Yeah, Mike, before I give you back to Sign Guy, I want to tell you thank you for all you've done for the history of wrestling in the Northwest and what you're all about. I appreciate you so much, and I wish you all the luck in the world. And let's see if Sign Guy has any more.
Thanks for that, Mike.
Well, I don't have too many more questions, but I will point out as well that in addition to Dean Silverstone's territory not being covered, very little is written on the Vancouver, BC territory, as Al Tomko territory, which saw people like Rick Rude and Road Warrior Hawk and the Honky Tonk Man get their starts. That might be something to put into the catalog of your mind for later on when you do need another project.
That is true. That is true. I have a very good friend who also set up my table at Cauliflower Alley, Steve Verrier. And he did a book before any of my books on the history of Northwest wrestling. And it's a good book, but it kind of hits the high spots. And I told him when I first met him, I said, you wrote the book that I wanted to write. And he just laughed. And before I wrote any of my books, I wrote to him and not asked permission, but just said, I feel like I can write some books that won't overlap each other or hinder each other, and I will always promote your work as well. And so he touched on a little bit of Portland, a little bit of Vancouver, but you're right. Vancouver, there's probably some good material there. Vancouver is an interesting place and has an interesting history and a long history as well.
Absolutely, and there's still a lot of the Tomko guys that are still around today.
Right. It's a sad situation when you start to think, and you go back, it's like, okay, if I'm going to write about Hawaii, who is there to get a hold of, to talk to? And there's, from the Hawaii territory, there's just a handful of guys, Don Morocco and Bill Francis and Rocky Iaukea, King Curtis's son, and maybe one or two others. It's sad. You're thinking like, oh my gosh, it's like 50 years old now, what you're going to be writing about. And if they were youngsters then, that's going to put them at least 70, just not a lot of resources around. Time moves on very quickly.
Very true. Well, Mike Rogers, if you have anything else you want to say to the listeners and plug and promote everything you got going, now would be a good time to do so.
Sure. Those books that we just talked about, they're all available on Amazon. The three series of interviews, they're entitled Excitement in the Air, which was Lonnie Main's catchphrase, The Voices of Northwest Wrestling, The History of Portland Wrestling, that book's entitled Katie Barred the Door. That was Frank Bonova, the Portland wrestling announcers, one of his catchphrases, and that's the History of Portland Wrestling. And then the latest one, again, is the Encyclopedia of Portland Wrestlers from the House of Action, and that's biographical sketches of every wrestler that worked in Portland. And kind of interesting, there was, I'll tell one last quick story for you. A lot of times the official record of who wrestled came from Don Owen. He would call the newspapers, and if you hadn't seen it on TV, or if it was a Tuesday night and you didn't go, whatever was printed in the newspaper was the official record, as far as what I'm recording and keeping track of. And I have a feeling that Don at times maybe wouldn't write down the results. So there was an instance where he'd get to, the end of the card, and he'd say, like, so-and-so went to a draw with Kay Fabian. And Kay Fabian is a wrestler that's in the book, obviously no idea who that was, but he appeared in the results two or three times, along with Matt Burns. Again, we have no idea, and I'm certain that's just Don Owen pulling a rib on the people he's talking to and the wrestling fans in general. But also it was fun. At one point, there was one result he gave Frenchie Robier, and Frenchie Robier was a part-time wrestler in the Northwest. And I happened to look it up, and I said, well, Frenchie Robier wasn't in the Northwest on this night. He was in the Maritimes. Who could this wrestler be? And I looked up, and it was Sean Reagan was a wrestler in Vancouver, and he had come down, and he was involved with Frenchie Robier in the result of this match. And I looked up, and I saw in Vancouver that night, or during that same time period, was Frenchie Martin. And so I said, this can't be Frenchie Robier. He was in the Maritimes. This has to be Frenchie Martin. So it's kind of fun playing detective at times. And Don Owen, he helps, with the role of where that can't be true. I'm going to have to do a little bit of detective work and see what Don Owen really meant.
I mean, if you can't remember the guy's name, you can't remember the guy's name, I guess.
Yep. There was no telling what was going to come out at that point then.
Hey, you remember he did that a couple times when he announced the wrestlers, he wouldn't remember their names, sort of like Ed Sullivan said, that one girl.
Well, when Ed Wiskowski changed into Mega Maharishi, I laughed because I know that was a rib on Don Owen, because there was no way that Don was going to be able to remember or say, Mega Maharishi, I'm Ed. And I think he just, I think he just gave up and said, Ed Wiskowski. And, you know, you could see, like, Wiskowski trying to tell him what to say. And Don Owing announcing was always, you were always in for a treat. You had no idea what he was going to say.
Definitely. All right, well, we thank you so much, Mike. We thank you for your time and everything, like I said, and we appreciate you.
Well, thank you. I sure appreciate visiting with you, and appreciate the shout-outs for the books that you provide very much. I thank you.
You're welcome. Mike Rogers, everybody. Thank you again. Sign Guy, what do you got coming up?
Well, the Sign of the Times, episode 604, will be out later today. It is being uploaded tomorrow on Turnbuckle Turmoil. We have Colin Stevens, a very fine young referee out of the state of Texas that works in Texas and surrounding states. Next Friday afternoon, we will have two big hours. We start half an hour earlier than normal. We have the icon Scott Helmrast out of North Dakota to start, and then we follow that with Buck Sexton from Warrior Pro Wrestling. Then you can find me on the 18th at Northwest Pro Wrestling in Vaughan, Washington at the Key Peninsula Civic Center. And on the 25th, I'll be down in Longview, Washington for Inclusion Pro Wrestling's debut event. You can find me on all the social medias. Chicken Bob also available on all the social medias. You can find me on the YouTubes, TheSignGuy77. Lots of content up there. Hopefully you subscribe, because otherwise it makes Stompin' Steve nervous. That's what I got, Coach.
Right on. And, man, I want to thank you also for all you do for wrestling and for helping me get my show, for putting me as a co-host with Turnbuckle Turmoil. I want to thank QT and JD for creating Turnbuckle Turmoil. And we wish QT all the luck in the world. Hopefully he'll be back soon. Have you heard from him lately?
It's been a couple, 3 weeks, but I have a plan to call him in the next day or so. He was doing very well. He was looking forward to being able to retire and do some traveling next spring.
Yeah, and I'm looking forward to us three getting together to do an NGW Green Room and a Sign of the Times, hopefully.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and next week, I'm still looking for a guest for next week, but on the 25th, I have Short Sleeve Samson. And on the 2nd of December, I've got Cosmo Williams. And on the 9th of December, I've got the Seattle Sports Union with our year-end special. And then on the 30th of December, at the end of the year show, I've got Sam Sims. Really looking forward to that one. Me and Sam are getting ready to get that one produced here pretty soon so we can start advertising that one. Sam's got a lot to say, and he's got a big history in the Northwest.
He does. And he makes a delicious beer.
A few of them, yes, definitely. And then also you guys can check me out at Coach Mike Jones, the coach with the most, Coach Mike Jones on Facebook, YouTube, Instagram, and Twitter. Don't forget to check out the Real School Army and the NGW Green Room for hundreds of interviews and the Coach Mike Jones Show podcast every Saturday at noon Pacific. We thank you guys so much for all you do and for your support and your feedback and all your love. We thank you so much. Is there anything else you got, Sign?
That's all I've got. Everybody, get out there, support your local independent wrestling wherever you may find it.
Thanks again, everybody, for Mike Rogers today, Sign Guy. And here is the Never Were with Coach Mike Jones Show Walk-On Song by Joe Love. Thank you, guys.
That's right, everybody. You know who it is. Coach Mike Jones, I'm the coach with the most. Coming at you hard from coast to coast. I don't want to boast, but now I got to roast you in my social media posts. You double dose, a diagnose. You feeling tired, life inspired, now you're a ghost. I'll be your host, so won't you raise a toast to the coach with the most, Coach Mike Jones.
Everybody say, Coach Mike.